So the Patimokkha chant, it's the main body of the monks' rules. So when we chant that, we chant with mindfulness. And this is the Buddha's teaching of the Vinaya, of the monastic discipline. So when we chant and we also put that into practice, this becomes the wholesome qualities of a monk. And if we go on tudong, and so go wandering through the forest or the countryside, this practice of wearing away at the defilements. And we need to have a good knowledge of the Patimokkha, be able to remember it as well and put it into practice. So if we can do all of this, then we are known as one who is keeping up the Patimokkha. And it's appropriate, and that person can then go on tudong. So sometimes also the mind is scattered, restless, and through chanting the Patimokkha, then it comes to peace and can be freed from any lust or anger or delusion. But when chanting, one needs to set one's heart on chanting it, to be chanting with mindfulness, and when listening, to also be listening mindfully as well. And this can bring about a lightness and ease in the body and the mind. Bring it to a malleable state where it's appropriate to be put to good use, where benefits can arise from it. So in the suttas, it mentions an ant that had drunk the saliva of a monk who could chant the Patimokkha. And even through that, that ant went to heaven after death. And it's because being able to memorize the Patimokkha, chant the Patimokkha, it's not something that comes about easily. It needs for a perfectly self-awakened Buddha to arise, and that's very difficult. Then he needs to teach the Dhamma and the Vinaya. And there needs to be monks who practice following those teachings. So these then are the tools that we can use to control our body, speech, and mind, so that the coarser defilements don't come out through them. If we have a control over our body and speech, then that can draw the heart into peace, into samadhi. And there it can be used to contemplate then. So the upajayas, the preceptors, they study before they're given the title of a preceptor about the appropriate method of the ordination ceremony. And at the end of the ordination ceremony, there is a chant that the preceptor recites. And this is that sila sikha, this training in virtue. It has the benefits of going on into citta sikha, so the training of the mind in samadhi. The benefit of that is the arising of wisdom. The benefit of that is the arising of knowledge, which then gives the benefit of vimutti, of freedom. And this happens due to our wisdom. But this all begins with sila, with virtue. So then that flows on, and then the wisdom arises, and that can break the defilements, giving rise to dispassion and leading to nibbana. And so this is something that we want, that we wish to have a mind which knows and sees the Dhamma. And so really the practice, it's not difficult. We've already studied these meditation objects of kesa, loma, naka, danta, tacho, hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. Our preceptor gave these to us on our ordination. Because when the eye sees a form, the ear hears a sound, for example, then feelings come up. And we've had the defilements training and molding our minds for a very long time now. So when that contact happens, we see something, for example, immediately a sense of self arises. We see something, we take it to be beautiful. We see something and it's stable, we see it as the source of happiness. We see it as being me, belonging to me, just like this. So therefore, the Krubajans, these great meditation masters, they've taught that the defilements arise at the point of this contact, where these external sense media contacts the internal sense bases. So when there's this contact, then Vedana arises. And from that, then Vedana feeling. And then from that, there is craving, upadana, clinging, and then becoming, and then birth. And so the sense of self then arises. So therefore, we need to be careful, to be cautious. This pasa, contact, we're not able to stop that, but we can be composed and restrained. If we see something as being beautiful, we can come back and contemplate and ask ourselves, well, how is this thing actually beautiful? Is it really beautiful? Is that genuine? And if we have mindfulness and samadhi, then we can see how it's not real. But even though our thoughts can tell us at times that it's real, what normally happens is that if we like something, then we just go on telling ourselves these stories, proliferating. If our samadhi is not firm. So therefore, we need to contemplate very frequently. And this samadhi can arise through our contemplation. It can also arise through reciting mantras, meditation words. So there are these two kinds of the cultivation of samadhi. So we can use wisdom to give rise to samadhi. For example, thinking about death and how this life, it needs to end in death. Our life is not sure. That each step that we take, it's like an animal in a slaughterhouse, that it's moving steadily closer and closer to being executed. So we can see then that we must die. And the heart can feel this sense of cool dispassion through that. So we just carry on thinking about that. And when death happens, then what's it like after that? After we're dead already. So there are these four elements that makes up the body. But when there's no more air and the fire runs out, when there's no more air, then the blood in the body stops to flow. And it starts to break down, starts to deteriorate. So the earth, the water, the fire, and the air that combine to make up this body, they break down. And when they break, what that means is there's no more life. That's death. When we still have life, then we're still able to move about. But what happens when we're dead? So we should contemplate that. When the body breaks, when it decays, and then what that turns into is this asubha kamatana contemplations of the 10 kinds of ways of contemplating the unbeautiful aspect of the body. So having died, the body then bloats, it turns a green tinge, maggots come and consume it and fill it up. So where is beauty to be found in that? So we can see that clearly through contemplating that way. Akilesas tell us that this is something beautiful. We need to respond in telling us that it's not beautiful, that there isn't any beauty there. And if the Akilesas just don't listen, the mind doesn't listen, then we take it to the point of death, when this body is lying in a coffin, then what's it like there? On the outside, it's all decorated nicely with flowers, but on the inside, it's a completely different story. It's no one wants what's inside the coffin. It belongs to bacteria already. And so we need to cremate the body then. We can't just keep it around. After not long, it gives off an odor. And even small animals, when they die, they give off a very pungent smell. And so we need to bury them or burn them. And so for people, then, it's even more the case that there's huge amounts of bacteria in the body. And so it's really something not attractive when it dies. The hair falls out, the teeth fall out. And so we can see there really isn't any self there. And so this body is devoid of any self. And when we contemplate, then the mind can experience peace. We can see contemplate the anicca, dukkha, anatta aspects of this nature of constant change, of stress, of not self. Now this isn't me. And we do this very frequently. It's contemplation to allow the mind to come to peace. And we can do that while we are walking, standing, lying down. We don't just need to be sitting in meditation. And wherever we go, we contemplate. Whatever it is that we see, and we contemplate that. So, for example, we have various teachers that we respect greatly who have passed away. And we may go to the anniversary of their passing. And we contemplate that one day there's going to be the anniversary of my death as well. So this contemplation then leads the mind into peace. Or if we don't like doing that so much, then we can use Buddho, Dhammo, Sangho if we're not inclined towards contemplation. And we just carry on with that, carry on reciting those mantras, those meditation words, not allowing any thoughts other than that to come and interrupt us. And this too brings the mind to peace. And when it's peaceful, then we come back and we contemplate again. And so see how this body, which we take to be beautiful, is actually something which isn't beautiful. You can see in our mind's eye the hair fall off. We can pull the skin off and see there's nothing attractive there. That really inside the body there's nothing attractive at all. You have a brain, there's the kidneys, the liver, the lungs, intestines. There's the stomach and there's food in the stomach. And sometimes with the corpse, it's already digested the food already. But then what remains, or that digested food, goes rotten as well. So it's really not something beautiful. And when the mind gains a knowledge of this, then it turns radiant. If we get this feeling that what we're seeing is not beautiful, then this turns the mind beautiful. But if what we see is beautiful for us, then the mind gets dark because of its delusion. If we see things as unattractive, then it grows in its radiance. And so the Dhamma is like this. If we have the defilements controlling and running our hearts, then that makes them dark. So therefore, as monastics, we need to put up a good fight against these defilements. We need to contemplate a lot, very frequently, so that wisdom arises. And so we do it like this. We can tell ourselves again and again that we need to die. Then the mind can gather together. What's it like then? It becomes bright. And we see that there aren't really any people then around. So this is Kayagata Sati. And so this contemplation of the body. Contemplating to see the body as merely a body. It's not a being, It's not a person. It's not me. It's not you. So you may wonder then, this word merely, what's that like? Seeing it merely being a body, what's that like? But when the mind gathers, then we see clearly and we see that it's really just not there. That it's only arising because of the proliferations of the mind. But when the mind is in a still state, and then it starts to bring up these thoughts, creations, and then knowledge arises and wisdom arises. And so here then this is the wisdom arising from the cultivation of the mind. We see the defilements and are able to destroy those defilements, and the mind becomes bright. You see that really there isn't any people around. And before we've seen them as beings, individuals, a self or a you. We see that's really not the case. It's just like robotic humans. So if we see that clearly, we see there isn't really any true self there. But in order to do this, there needs to be samadhi present. Normally, we see everything in terms of the self, and this is because of delusion. So we should try this out, and one day this state of realization will appear for us. We'll see that all people are moving towards their death, and that life is not sure. Again, the feeling that all wealth in the world, we don't want any of it. Really, all monastics know this already, that we're not able to take anything with us, and so therefore we seek out the Dhamma instead. And if we see that Dhamma, then the mind in turn becomes bright, radiant. And so this is what it's like to understand the Dhamma, which means to see truth. So we should really put this into practice, to put forth our effort, to endure, to train, to go against the flow, the stream of the defilements, of all of those defilements, in order to enter the stream of Dhamma. And the more that we see that, then the more faith we gain, the more effort we just naturally have. And the more we train, the more we practice. And then it becomes more and more clear, our insights. In the beginning, you may have many doubts about all the different methods of practice. You can be doubting so much. But in the end, what's it like? The doubts just go all by themselves. We don't need to destroy them. So think and contemplate. Before we're in doubt, because the mind wasn't peaceful. So therefore we need to establish the heart well first and put our efforts into the practice. And then in the end, both body and mind become buoyant and radiant. These qualities of vitaka, vichara, patisukha, ekagata, of the initial and sustained application of mind, of rapture and happiness and one-pointedness of mind come together. We may previously have wondered what's jhana like, but then we don't doubt about that. We may have wondered what is momentary samadhi, what is neighborhood samadhi and access samadhi like, but then we relieve all those doubts through our practice. So a preceptor teaches us these meditation methods, so hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth and skin. He gives us these weapons to use. So we should contemplate these a lot. And in the end, we gain a clear understanding of them. So Lumpucha Majanchai, he taught to do this. He asked if we see the body to be beautiful, then we... Sorry, he said that just by seeing the nature of one single strand of hair clearly, then we see the nature of all hair there is. You see that it's genuinely not beautiful. Gain understanding of that. You pull the skin off the body and see there isn't any self there to it. And then the mind gathers. The path comes into harmony. So we really need, in order to get here, to take the practice for real, to really put our efforts into it. If we have or inclined towards wisdom, then we should be contemplating a lot. And some people are like that. They have this natural aspect of wisdom, so they should be contemplating a lot, following up on their minds, knowing their minds. There's the merit that arises from dana, from generosity, and that can fill up the mind. There's the merit that comes from sila, and there's the merit that comes from meditation. And so that also fills the mind, makes it contented. And so may you train your minds like this. Wherever you go, be keeping a good watch over your heart. What feelings are there? Know them. Do we take something to be beautiful? So we can contemplate the outside of this body. Is that something that's beautiful? The things that touch this body, our robes, we wash them every 15 days. And that's because they get dirty due to being in contact with our skin. Our skin is something that we need to clean. So as we're cleaning the skin, we should be contemplating that as well. That we're cleaning it because it is something that is inherently filthy. In the Thai language, for the monks to rest or go to sleep, they say jamwat, which literally means to remember the monastery. And so what that means then is that when we fall asleep, we need to do so with mindfulness. And then when we wake up, then we remember then. We remember our mindfulness, we remember our meditation objects. And we're not sleeping in order to find satisfaction in that sleep, but rather to be able to put in our efforts further. That we're not seeking out pleasure and food. Because we've experienced this all already. This pleasure in sleep, pleasure in food, as lay people, we had a lot of that. But now we are monks. And so we should be practicing, should be meditating, really setting our hearts on contemplating. And then one day we will see the Dhamma. And so those who are inclined towards wisdom should use that wisdom a lot. Those who are inclined towards samadhi should develop samadhi a lot. But in the end, it all comes together in sila, samadhi, and panya, in virtue, collectedness, and wisdom. So may you all be intent on this.